Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, episode number 82. Before we get started today, I would like to give a special shout out to Hannah and Lisa at Work Hub in Tyler, Texas, and Samantha at Platypus Coworking in Ballarat, Australia, for opening in the last couple of weeks. Definitely check out their websites. I'll put the links in the show notes. Hannah and Lisa converted an old gym in Tyler, Texas, and the design is amazing. Super unique, really fun problem solving that they had to do, and the outcome has been really terrific. And they've done, I think I may have mentioned them last week, they've done some really great pre-sell work on pre-selling their space, and things are going really well. And Samantha just opened and started touring. So they're all a part of the My Flight Group program, and I'm super excited to see them launch. So congratulations to both. This is Jamie Russo, by the way. I own a co-working space in Palo Alto, California, and I'm the executive director of the Global Workspace Association and the host of the Everything Coworking Podcast. Okay, so super busy. I have missed a couple of weeks trying to get back on the horse. July 4th, if you are a frequent listener, you know I had a trip to Portugal, which was amazing. If anyone has an out-of-the-country trip they're trying to get on the calendar, highly recommend. We had such a great time. Really great culture. The people were so friendly. Fortunately, because I don't speak any other languages except some high school French, lots of English speaking, very easy to no language barrier issues at all. The food was amazing. We had a really lovely time, but I've been playing catch up since and had jet lag last week and was trying to work through that. So glad to be back at it. So we are getting super close. I have to talk about the conference, of course, with my GWA hat on. The early bird deadline is August 3rd, which is a Friday. So make sure if you're going to grab your tickets, you get them before then, because the price of the tickets is going to go up by $100 after that. So make sure you snag them. The conference is coming up right around the corner, September 12th through the 14th in Austin. And all the details are pulling together. If you have been waiting for more details to show up on the website, all the session descriptions are up and speaker bios and whatnot are being put up as we get speaker details from our speakers. So a couple of things I'm super excited about. Our keynote speaker, Anthony Slumbers, was a recent guest on the podcast. He is just really engaging and a great big picture thinker on what's happening in the industry. And I think from anyone listening to the podcast perspective, you know, he sees the need for building owners to figure out how to make their buildings more marketable through flexible space. And he sees the relationships between the owners and the operators and what that could look like in a beautiful relationship down the road. So he's going to talk about what he sees there and how that's evolving. A session that I'm super excited about is called Yoga for Buildings. How flexible can they get? And the panel is going to provide case studies on how to design with flexibility in mind as you create a shared workspace that you want to have stay relevant for, say, 10 years. And we're going to talk today about the most common reasons that co-working spaces fail. And one of those is a short lease. But if you're trying to design something that you want to be around for 10 years and you know maybe your market shifts, maybe your demand changes and you want to have some flexibility, there are products and ways of designing space that are emerging that make this a lot easier. So I think this is kind of a forward-looking but really practical session that I'm really looking forward to. And then, of course, the reason we all attend conferences is the opportunity to build relationships with other operators and, in this case, building owners, and to meet vendors. We have a lot of great vendors and new ones that'll be at the conference. And it's a great way to make sure that you're kind of on top of all the new technology. But we're hosting sort of a networking opportunity called the Conversation Corner that will host curated small group discussions and be open for coffee dates throughout the conference. And I'm super excited about this. And of course, we have hosted happy hours, breakfast, and lunches. So lots of opportunities to interact and meet folks and build relationships that you can carry with you after the conference. So definitely check that out. I'll put the link in the show notes, www.flexofficeconference.com. And then I also wanted to mention I am working on a date for the next co-working startup school. It will likely be mid-August when we kick out. So if you are starting a co-working space, this program is for you. If you are investing in your co-working space and want to avoid costly mistakes and stress by getting expert and peer support in a highly facilitated environment. So the goal is to make sure that you create the right space for you and your target market right from the beginning. Get that business model right and make sure that it's financially sustainable and matches your goals. So we'll do things like review your pro forma, help you with your product mix, design, furniture, working with vendors, getting your marketing systems down, talk about hiring, all the things. So if you're interested in learning more and making sure you're on the list to get the next date, go to www.coworkingstartupschool.com. Okay, so today we are going to talk about the top five reasons that coworking spaces fail. There may be more. This is just in my experience, in my current perspective, what I'm seeing happen in the marketplace. And as you are thinking about starting a space or worried about the status of your space, I think these are good things to think about and be aware of. So we're going to dive right in and start with number one. So I should mention, aside from probably the real key issues are location, which we're not going to talk about today. That needs to be right. And you need to do a lot of research kind of locally to figure that out. And I have another episode much earlier, probably in the 50s, about working with a broker and using someone who has really good access to great research. I would work with someone who is in the co-working industry. So a couple of folks I like to recommend, Ryan Hoops with Colliers out of Dallas, and Casey Godwin, who is with Swearengen, also happens to be in the Dallas area, but they do amazing work and do really great research that's at a local market level and can help you make good decisions. So, but I'm not going to talk about location today. Internet speed is another one. You got to get that right. One of the big reasons people leave co-working spaces is the internet doesn't work consistently. You don't have enough bandwidth, et cetera. So make sure you get that right. And I want to mention really quickly, again, this is not my technical list today of why spaces fail, but I think one of the things I see happening, because this just happened to me, is we have an IT guy who helps us with our space. And I've been telling him that all of a sudden we have users who are doing, and I've talked about this on the podcast, you know, big data, artificial intelligence work, like they're just using a lot of bandwidth. And this is just kind of happened recently. And so we've been trying to figure out how do we get more bandwidth? We have a dedicated line to the building, but we need more capacity. So an IT guy will kind of look at what you use on average. And they're just mostly, I think a lot of IT folks are used to really standard users, like corporate clients who just don't use as much bandwidth. And so you may need to be a little bit forceful with the IT person that you work with and just say, look, I understand that you don't think we need more bandwidth, or you think we could get by without a fiber line or whatever it is. You may sort of need to be in charge on that call, even though they'll know lots of technical stuff that you don't know. We just installed new updated access points for Meraki, which I'm super excited about. And I was more than happy to have the IT guy take charge of that process. But I've had to push him a little bit on like, look, we need to figure out how to get more bandwidth to the building, even if it's just for some of our users. Like, to me, that's like, we're in the business of providing a really good experience internet wise for all of our members, not just the ones who, you know, are sort of using moderate amounts of bandwidth. So you may have to get a little pushy in that phase with your IT guy when you set up your space. And then parking and other, you know, accessibility issues. If you're in an urban area, parking may not be expected, but you need to be in a place that's easy to get to for, you know, any of the folks in your target market. And if you're in the suburbs, then you need to have good parking. So those are probably the things that'll ruin you before you even get started. But we're going to start with the next thing on my list, which is wrong product mix for the target market. So do you have the type of work environment that your target market will buy? This is just kind of fundamental to selling. And of course, there are a lot of things we could get into in terms of lead gen and selling, but assume all of those things are on track? You know, do you have the product mix that your target market will buy? And what I worry about here that I kind of see as people go through the process of designing a space, and believe me, I totally get it. I've done this myself, and I'll talk about that in a minute, but this is sort of the process I see happening, is an operator will say, okay, I want to start a space, and I have like this much seed capital to start, right? And sort of rather than taking the next step of really going in depth and understanding who their best customer will be, what type of work they do and what type of workspace they prefer, they sort of bypass the market validation step and go straight to designing a space based on what they can afford to create. I'm not saying this is never going to work and that it's 100% wrong, but it can definitely be one of the key factors that leads to problems in a market. And even if you do all the research, it's possible you get it wrong because you're still always to some extent making educated guesses and you're not totally sure what everyone will buy. Do people want more co-working or more dedicated desks, or do they want 3-person offices or 1-person offices? Like, you're doing the best research you can and making educated decisions. And as I mentioned in the intro, consider trying to use some building materials that are flexible so that you can shift your space as needed. And one I will mention that we're looking at for our space is called Imagispace, and I'll put a link to the show notes. But they can put up walls in literally days, and you own the walls. They're basically furniture, and you can move them. So things like that, in case you get the mix really wrong or need to flex over time, depending on the size of offices that your market demands. So I think, again, sort of going back to sort of mindset here is, you know, don't take your budget and then build the space you can afford and kind of cross your fingers and hope for the best. There may be instances in which this makes sense. You know, I will try to say this, as I don't want to make sort of exclusive 100% black and white statements, because the world is never like that, right? You may be in a market that's small and you're validating and you don't want to, you know, spend X dollars on your validation space. And you may err on the side of, you know, more open space and less offices because they're really expensive, because you're just validating sort of general demand for flexible space. There are certainly instances in which this can make sense. But if you're going after a space that you want to be your space for the next 5 or 10 years, you want to get this mix right. So go through the process of doing the market research with people that will be honest with you. Don't take your 3 best friends out for coffee and ask them, or a glass of wine and ask them their opinions. They will lie to you and tell you what they want to hear. You need to ask people who don't care what you think, but who will be the one spending money in your space. You know, these people can be an advisory board. These people can be people you do buy a coffee or take out to lunch and, you know, pick their brains. But people who are invested enough to answer some questions for you, but, you know, will tell you the truth and be honest. So here are a few things I would do. So do the market research with people that are not your friends and will not just tell you what you want to hear. There's a concept called confirmation bias, and every human is subject to this at one time or another, and you have to be aware of it in order to not fall into the trap. And the idea is that we look for things in the world that confirm what we want to think is true. So don't go invite people to coffee that you know will tell you, you know, they're going to buy only open space or whatever it is, you know, that you sort of want to sell. Make sure you're interviewing people who will tell you honestly the type of work they do, how they spend their day. Do they meet with clients? What percentage of the time do they spend on the phone each day? Where do they work today? What would they be willing to spend for a workspace for them or for their team? So ask them those questions. And then the other thing I would do is visit co-working spaces in the area if there are other options. So if you are one of the first people to try to bring this to your location, to your city or your town, this is obviously not possible. But if you can, go visit other spaces in the area, in either secret shop or be honest with them about who you are. Talk to them, you know, when the community manager or the salesperson gives you a tour, talk to them about which of their offerings tends to sell best. Get a day pass and observe how people use the space and where the energy is. Is it in the offices, or is it the meeting rooms, or is it the open space? Although, a side note here, if you're going to do research like that, make sure you spend several days in a space, because as anybody knows who has a space, sometimes you'll have, you know, days that are just randomly really quiet for some reason or randomly really busy. It can be a bit unpredictable. So make sure you give yourself a sample as you're doing your research. So part of the reason I mentioned that this is kind of a common thing that happens when somebody's thinking about opening a space is the primary driver of expenses in a shared workspace is, and expenses, I mean startup expenses, is enclosed spaces. So meeting rooms, private offices. So when you're thinking about starting a space and you have a finite budget, then you may talk yourself into doing more open space than your market wants or will buy. And so I want you to be really careful about that. And I know I talk about this a lot, but I think it's a big reality and a challenge for folks who open and then don't have the right mix. In many markets, although there are markets where this doesn't happen, so again, not 100%, but often, even in new markets, people understand offices and they do the type of work that needs to get done in an office. I am an office person. I am on the phone all the time or in a Zoom meeting all the time. Unfortunately, I wish that wasn't always the case. I'd love to have some days where I could just kind of sit in the open space with my laptop open and be creative. But anyway, you know, I am that person. So I really empathize a lot with that scenario. I love community, I love collaboration, but I'm loud and people would hate me if I sat in the open space all the time. So make sure that you're designing the space that people will buy, not that just fits your definition of co-working. Open and collaborative space is certainly a tool to support a collaborative work environment, but we continue to learn that striking the right balance of what we call I and we spaces is also important. So if your target market needs enclosed spaces and you can't afford to build that space yet, know that trade-off is there and understand that risk. Because if you create the space and you don't have the spaces that will sell, you may be in a position where your business doesn't work. Okay, number two. The space needs too much work for the size and you can't pay back the startup costs within the lease time frame. So I see this happening. I look at a lot of P&Ls and pro formas, and this is a big challenge that if you're not used to looking at a pro forma and thinking through the model, you may not understand. So an example, you have a 4,000 square foot space. It's in shell condition, and you know that your market needs some offices and meeting rooms. And so you've priced out your build out, and your rent is in the $20 per square foot range. It is unlikely that if you sign a 5-year lease, you can pay back your startup costs, or you might just be able to do it in 5 years. So if you look at your pro forma from a cash flow perspective, you will have net income every year. So you may be cash flow positive, not every year, probably after the first year or the first year and a half, but you will have positive net income. And so that will look good to you. But then you need to look at how much does it cost you to create the space, to start up the space, to build the walls, to buy the screens for the conference room, to buy all the furniture, to, you know, all the things. And can you pay that back within the 5 years? I would say almost always you care if you can pay it back within your lease time. You may have different reasons for not caring if you don't more than pay it back. So again, I have a recent episode around what size co-working space is right for you. And I suggest you listen to that if you're kind of in the camp of, do I care if I return my startup costs? A couple of reasons why you care. In general, when people start businesses, they think about the return on investment, and the return on investment here is, do you make money on the project? And if you can't pay back your startup costs, then you don't make money on the project. However, maybe the project is paying you a nice salary that you feel happy about and that fits your personal goals for 5 years. And you get to build the community that you care about, and you get to prove out your proof of concept. So maybe it's okay with you if you just pay back your startup costs and don't make anything over and above that. That may be totally fine. So that's an individual decision. If you are getting investors and doing a big build out, they care. They need a payout and whatever else you're promising them over time, probably sooner than 5 years. So in that case, you care. And so this is a tricky piece. There's sort of two aspects here, three, One, so it a 4,000 square foot space just has a limited amount of inventory and ability to generate revenue, right? So if it costs a lot of money to create private spaces in there, you just don't have the inventory to kick off the revenue that you need to pay back those costs. In general, taking spaces that are in shell condition can be hard. It's a great way to create a space that looks exactly how you want, but in the typical lease arbitrage model where you're signing a lease, a traditional lease with a landlord, it's a hard model to pay back really nice buildouts, you know, in 5 years, which is why a lot of folks will sign 10 to 15 year leases so that they are cash flow positive after a certain point, but they're not making real profit for years into the project. So know that that is often the case here. And this is why a model that people understand this equation really love is the landlord partnering with an operator model where the landlord is paying for the build out because then he's improving his or her asset and you're running the space for a management agreement under a management agreement relationship so that the project kind of works for both parties. You're not spending more money than your project can support, and the landlord is getting the benefit of having a nice space that you no longer have access to when your lease is up. So there's, you know, what condition is the space in? You know, I know a lot of successful folks who look for spaces, like they will not do a deal until they find a space that does not need to be built from scratch, that they can walk in. And I did this in my Palo Alto space. I mean, I walked in, I put up some walls, and that was about it. You know, we painted, we took out all the furniture. It was actually a furnished space and, you know, reworked the entire layout, but we didn't change a lot of walls and HVAC and sprinklers and that kind of thing. And it was night and day on in terms of the project return when you can do that. And so know that it is a choice to wait for a space that is not in shell condition. And shell condition means, you know, it's ready for construction, but has no walls and no kitchen. And, you know, you have to do all of the work. You have to run all your electrical and put in all your HVAC and put in all the sprinklers and all those things that are expensive. And the landlord will typically give you tenant improvement dollars to do that, but it's not going to cover, you know, all the work that needs to get done. So you're coming out of pocket to do work on a space that you will not own. Unless you own it, then good for you. And then the other piece is the rent, right? So if you're in a market, and when I talk about, I realize kind of flawed thinking, imagine that. If you're in a market where rent is $12 to $15 a square foot and you want to do a 4,000 square foot space, it can work. If you're in a market where rent is $35 a square foot, then a 4,000 square foot space is hard to make work because after you pay your rent, it's hard to pay a community manager and it's hard to pay back those startup costs. So if you're doing a smaller space or if you're doing any size space, watch out for, you know, how much work do you need to do on the space and how long does it take you to pay it back? How much is a rent? And, you know, that'll immediately kind of impact your ability to do at least a smaller space. And then how long is your lease? Because you need some time to be able to pay back a build out and make that whole equation make sense. So what I want to not see anyone do is sign a 5-year lease and then not have paid back their startup costs within that time. Because if that's sitting on a bank loan, or even if it's coming out of savings, you know, you want to recover that before you have to leave the space. And a renewal is not always guaranteed. Okay, that was kind of a long one. Number three, a space is undercapitalized to make it through the ramp up period. So again, this is not entirely black and white, and not every space takes the same amount of time to ramp up. So you may have a smaller space in a smaller market with some pent up demand for flexible workspace and not a lot of other options. And you may be able to fill a space really quickly and be cash flow positive really quickly. Or you may have done an amazing deal with your landlord and you may have a year of free rent and be cash flow positive really quickly. I mean, there are cases where, you know, you can just have a sort of dreamy experience, but oftentimes not the case. So if you take a larger space, say 15,000 square feet in a market with other options, other competitors, it may take you up to 18 months to get to 90, 95% capacity. It will take time, even if you have a lot of private spaces like office spaces and team suites that you think, you know, will move pretty quickly in your market. You've done all your research, you know, the demand is there. You want to plan for that ramp up period. You want to have cash in the bank to cover shortfalls each month. You want to have a marketing budget that will get your search, you get you up into the first three search results when someone searches in Google. You want to be prepared to do those things. And again, just make sure that you have working capital to cover expenses, well, cover the shortfall of your expenses during your ramp up time, and plan for that to take, you know, up to 18 months. Again, it could go faster than that. This is, again, one of the challenges of starting a business is that you need to have the capital to start the thing and pay for the build out. And then you need to have capital to make sure that you don't go out of business just because you didn't have enough capital to get you through the initial stages of marketing and building awareness. Because you could have a model that works. It just takes a certain amount of time to get to capacity. And so you don't want to take yourself out of business during the build-up phase on a model that does work. It just needs a little bit more time. So, and I'm not talking about a, you know, a tech company model where you have no idea how you're going to make revenue for years and years, but, you know, pretty realistic period of time. And generally from what I see, that could be about 18 months. So again, you want to open with a marketing budget, which again, I hear people kind of miss sometimes, and don't assume that you will, you know, network and sort of social media your way to capacity. In some markets, again, with a well-connected owner, that can work. Or in markets where you don't have a lot of competition and you show up in the top three search results for co-working and office space, you may not have to pay Google to start. But in markets where you're not in the top three organic search results, you will want a budget to pay Google until your SEO kicks in. So, you know, when you think through your sales funnel, the top of that sales funnel is leads into your website or to your Google My Business listing. And you need to get those leads either through active organic search in your market or through paying Google to get those leads for you when someone searches and gets that results list. So make sure you have a budget and are prepared for a sales ramp up period. Number four, an absent owner, or you have the wrong person giving tours. So usually the owner will be the best salesperson for the co-working space. As an owner, you have a really strong why, you have a really strong passion for the space, you may be really well connected in the community. People just will relate to you because you are like them. You run a business, you know, you have struggles, you're an entrepreneur, you understand a lot of things that they are going through. And that connection will, if you give a decent tour and build rapport with people reasonably well, will just be clear when you do tours. But if you are an owner with other responsibilities, and I'm in that camp, then you don't give all the tours. Or if you have multiple locations, you cannot give all the tours at some point without, you know, making yourself completely crazy and frantic. So you will need to turn that responsibility over to someone on your team. And you want to make sure that they are converting really well and keeping an eyeball on this. And I have learned that lesson recently as well. I continue to learn more about hiring as I, you know, go through this journey of co-working. And we talked about this in one of my flight groups recently, is hiring is just hard, right? And it gets even harder if you have a smaller space and you can only hire one person. You have to decide what you want them to be good at. So this is part of my new thinking. Like, it's really hard to hire a community manager that's great at all the things if you only get one, right? So if your space is, you know, maybe less than, you can have one-ish or one and a half people up to like 8,000 square feet. But if you have like a 5,000 square foot space, you know, your P&L can't handle two people. So you got to pick one person and decide what you want them to be best at. And I think this is my current preference, is that person should be really amazing at giving tours and interacting with members. Because when you have sales and conversions, you can manage the weaknesses in the other pieces, which maybe are things like getting admin tasks done, getting blog posts up, social media, newsletters, kind of the other things, marketing things that we tend to sort of lump into the community manager job. But if that person is good at or has the aptitude for you to train them to be good at giving tours and lead follow-up and even the front end, communicating with prospective leads before they come in for membership, but just making that connection and really selling people on the space and converting members, and just really has that hunger to fill the space, that solves a lot of problems. If you're not the person who gives the tours, I think you want to consider having that be one of your priorities, because it's a lot easier to outsource the other things to people who are not on site and at a lower, you know, at a rate that you can afford, even if you have a smaller space. If you have a bigger space, then you can have a salesperson who's focused on sales, and you can have the community manager who kind of wears all the other hats. So that's one of the nice aspects of building out a bigger space, is that you don't have to have one person who's amazing at all the things. So you can kind of sort of allocate the things that need to get done and the skill sets that you need to have in the space, you know, among more staff. But the sales piece is really important. And I know this sounds silly, but it's hard to tell. It's hard to know what a good conversion rate. And sometimes it takes a while. It's hard to know, is it my marketing spend? Is it just that the market is soft? Is there more competition? It can be very hard to kind of know where the issue is when you're not seeing the conversions. But I think knowing that you have someone that's very passionate about bringing in new members and sort of like has that sales hunger, co-working spaces are not, I think the sort of this like the salesy, you know, sticky, schmarmy sort of salesperson certainly doesn't align with the culture in a typical, but I'll tell you, my current community manager, lawyer by training, just is super passionate about filling that space with members. And not the revenue numbers, but for the, she really wants people to be in that space. And she like dedicates her energy to that. And it just makes a huge difference. So, which will impact your ramp up time, which we talked about before. So I think make sure that the person that is in charge of your sales has the right support from you in terms of lead generation, has the right training on how to give a tour and what to talk about on the tour, the right processes, a CRM in place, and understands, you know, sort of what the process is for getting people in for a tour and following up after the tour, negotiating if they need to on price, et cetera, you know, and all the sort of technology tools that they need to succeed. So make sure all those things are in place. Kind of on a related note, the last one is an owner doesn't have metrics and systems in place to run a business well. So you can care a lot about building a community and get people in the door through your sales process and having an amazing person giving tours and just not have the things in place you need to have a sustainable business, because this is about running a business and making sure that you have, you know, metrics that you're watching and spending money in the right places and making sure that your expenses are, you know, in line and being monitored. And a lot of folks kind of miss this part of running a business. But this is true, I think, for any small business. When you're working on margins that are, you know, not super high, you have to run a really tight ship and have the tools in place and the metrics in place and the leadership systems in place to make sure that your team is doing all the things that they can sort of most efficiently and that your team is spending time on the things that really drive revenue for the business. So I'm in the process of updating the KPI document that I had for the co-working KPI episode and making it super, 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 super detailed. So I'll mention that on the next, maybe the next podcast when it's done, because I think things like that are really important. And leadership systems, like having a weekly meeting with your manager, like making sure you're meeting with whoever you have doing your marketing and reviewing metrics and making sure that all the business drivers are in place. If you let that stuff go and spend all your time on building community, your business will start to struggle at some point, even with a strong community. So that is it. I'm going to wrap with that today. I hope that this has been helpful. Let me just run through these one more time. And we'll put the notes in the show notes at everythingcoworking.com. My website, by the way, is getting a huge update. I know I've gotten some emails from people saying, I can't find this on the website. I know. So we're almost there. I think end of July should be good for a relaunch and things will be much easier to find. But this will be, show notes are at www.everythingcoworking.com/82. So the five things are wrong product mix for the target market. The space needs too much work for the size, or you can't pay back the startup costs within the lease time frame. Number three, you are undercapitalized to make it through the ramp up period. Number four, you don't have the right person giving tours and making driving enough sales. And number five, the owner does not have the right metrics and systems in place to run a business well. So hopefully this was helpful. Have a great rest of your week, and we will talk next week.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.